Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
The Commanders have a foundation built on the field for their future success. It's time for you to plan for yours as well. The exclusive sponsor of our show will help. The law firm, Kondorian Murad. They'll help you update your last will and testament, set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you. They will give you a discount. Again, kmlawyers.com. On the guest hotline, we find our guy, John Keim, ESPN.com, covering the local football 53. Had a great story today on Cliff Kingsbury finding his love for the game again here in the nation's capital. John, thanks for a few minutes. Getting ready for playoff football, one of the rare occasions in your time as the longest tenured member of the beat, where you've gotten to cover the playoffs. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's kind of weird. Like, I didn't realize that there was still football after January 5th. Who knew?
Yeah, normally you got to, like, cancel a vacation.
It's for those other cities, not ours.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, these other cities, that looks fun for them. Yeah. No, it's fun to be – you know what's fun this year is to talk football all season. Like, every week it was going in there and talking to guys about matchups, about – hey, how do you need to beat this guy? What about this matchup? And it was all football, and that was a pleasure.
Yeah, unprecedented around these parts in the 2000s, for sure. There are a lot of different pieces that I want to get into from the story here, but let's just kind of go back to Kingsbury getting fired, which is where the piece begins. He travels the country with buddies of his, and I think realizes he wants to coach again. Was there a thought initially from him maybe that he wouldn't want to keep coaching?
After he got fired, I think he was kind of, beaten down, but certainly it was a difficult experience. And I think at that point, he definitely was considering other options, whether it was as an investor or some sort of, you know, he has a business management degree, maybe putting something like that to use. He was around people who are making nine-figure deals. He has a billionaire friends. So he knew he could do something else. I think it was just more or less, I don't know how serious that was. I think he had to get to the point where he's like, yes, this is what I want to do. I don't know if it was really – I think a lot of people go through their life at a certain point, like, is this really what I want to do? I think he found out for sure that it was, and even told his brother basically – he didn't say it quite like this, but in my paraphrasing, is retirement sucks. So, you know, here's this guy traveling all over the place, but he really did need to find, like, what is the reason why you want to keep coaching? And what is it that drives you with coaching? I think he had to rediscover that.
John, so I'd love to go into this one element of things that I try to put myself in these shoes, and it's almost impossible for a regular person to do that. But the way Arizona ended, he gets the extension. He's going to be paid through 2027 like he's the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals without having to be the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. That's the kind of security that nobody could ever fathom in their day-to-day life. But he's got that. How much is that kind of influencing things even maybe today and maybe his next steps and sort of this journey that he's gone on of self-discovery with that great backdrop of getting paid like a head coach without the responsibility?
It means you don't have to rush into something for the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it certainly gives you the security to know, like, if you – clearly at some point – he'd like to be a head coach again. And he has said that. And even back in the spring, he mentioned something about how when Dan Quinn first started doing that bag drill with the little competition stuff before practice. He's like, hey, if I get a chance to be a head coach again, this is something I would do. So he's still thinking along those lines. But as he has said here very clearly, it's not about the money. So, you know, if you're making a couple million dollars or whatever as an offensive coordinator and someone comes along with an $8 million contract, well, that's going to open your eyes. Well, right now, he doesn't need that. So I think it has to be a good situation. It just buys him the security. I don't know that it's going to stop him from becoming one before that deal is up, but it certainly buys you the security to know that I don't have to take this one just for the money. I'm going to take it because it's what I want.
One thing I've always been interested in with Kingsbury this year, and it didn't really come up in the piece, but I'm sure you kind of got something on it along the way, was he did not like seek out Washington, and right. All along it was the Commanders. People forget he basically agreed to the Raiders job, and I still don't know what happened, but it fell apart, and then he ended up here, and look at the Raiders now. I mean, they fired their GM, their coach, that whole staff is going to be out. Do we know any more about like how all that played out? Because it's funny how sometimes in life, like it's the job that you kind of fall into as much as that you really wanted that ends up being the perfect one for you.
These guys gave him a 3-year deal. The Raiders were giving him 2. So there's more security in that. And so I think I think that was a big part of it. That's always been my understanding. That's what that was the big part of it. I don't know if it was Antonio Pierce said, well, Magic Johnson called him, all that. It wasn't really about that. It never hurts to have Magic call, but in this situation, it was a better contract. So I was surprised, a team like the Bears didn't make him a strong offer to be their OC. And although then when you watch Eberflus coach, you kind of understand, like, maybe he didn't quite know what he was doing with it. But that was the team that, to me, always made the most sense. These guys are certainly grateful that it fell this way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the stories now from February 1st of last year, though. I mean, the reports are that he was taking the job. Like, it didn't seem like it was like, oh, he's talking to both teams. Like, he was going to be the Raiders it. OC, and
yeah,
then he wasn't.
For sure. And again, but nothing was signed. And I do think the one thing that I don't have the great depth on is how the wording of some of the contracts were in relation to his Cardinals contract. Because I think that plays a part, too. I just don't have the depth of knowledge of that particular aspect. But that always plays a factor as well. But again, these guys gave him a 3-year deal, and they were offering him 2.
John Keim, ESPN, with us here on G&D. Wrote a great piece about Cliff Kingsbury that it's available now on the interwebs. So, John, one of the things that the blowhards and the loud talkers like myself were pointing out in his history that was kind of happening here for a little while, whatever you want to call it, the nickname or otherwise, the Cliff, so to speak, where the whole point of me bringing it up wasn't to some kind of I told you so or some sort of weird agenda. It was hey, Terry McLaurin just had one catch against Philadelphia in a loss and the offense is scuffling a little bit. Let's move him around. And the whole point of bringing it up to me was, what's happened since? Some changes. Then there are things that I'll never be, intelligent enough to see and spot in terms of motion design and the way certain run games are called or different things like that. But to me, the one that I can see as a pudgy dope at home is 17's not just on the left side every time. He is sometimes, but he's also in motion. He's also on the right side. He's doing, everything under the sun, which is what I want. And that, to me, doesn't happen without this kind of introspective life journey that he's gone on, right, of kind of self-discovery. I think that's a theme for this coaching staff with Dan Quinn as well, hungry to figure out, hey, what were my missteps the first time, and let me correct them. I'd love for you to kind of speak to that in terms of Kingsbury's journey here to whether it's self-discovery or self-analysis or whatever, to say, I can now recognize where I need to improve and then actually do something about it.
I think one of the things that jumps out with this staff, you can go with Dan Quinn, and I think it's also true with Kingsbury from all the people you talk to, is there's one word that jumps out, is collaboration. And at the end of last year, the number one word that people would use, the offensive guys would use, was collaboration, but it was the lack of it with the offensive staff in particular. And how I think with Kingsbury is like I don't think he necessarily cares who comes up with the idea if it's a good one. So if there's something going on, I think there's not a stubbornness to it to resist change. And I think that's a big key. So I think that's an element of that. Like, he could have just said, listen, it's not the issue with Terry on the left side or right side. For example, like the next week against Dallas, he was on the left side exclusively. They took shots. They just didn't hit him. But he was open because it was man coverage, not zone. It's just that the Eagles game was the one where it really was magnified. But you're right. Like in other games, you say, hey, it wasn't the big issue in the first half of the year. But they did do it, and it has resulted in not just moving around, but throwing to him on different spots. But I think that's a result of, you know, in some ways maybe egoless football where you don't really care, like, well, how does it come up or who brings it up? It's like, is it a good solution? And you're right. I think that's the case. I also think in this case that Jaden Daniels' ascension also helps as well. To he has a quarterback here who studies and works a certain way that perhaps his quarterback in Arizona did not do. That too makes a difference because you can evolve your offense a little bit more, and they put a little bit more on Jaden Daniels' shoulders down the stretch here with the run game not working as well. And I think some of that, it all plays together. But I think that's why Kingsbury feels like he's at a good spot, because he has a quarterback who works like he does. And the quarterback has a coordinator who works like he does. It's a good fit for both. But I think that also results in the ability to maybe grow your offense more than what you had in the past. And again, I go back. So there's that part of it. But it is the other part where guys will talk about, like, yeah, if you bring up a play, you know, and he even told me, like, you know, it might be the worst play in the world, but if they want to own it, I'll try it. And so I think there's all that. And, you know, like, I know from with McLaurin, there were definitely games where people complained about it where he's like, it wasn't an issue. But he also knew in some games you have to move him around because it has to – you can't be static. You can't be predictable. And they've become less so with that.
John Keim on Grant and Danny wrote about Cliff Kingsbury. You can check it out on ESPN.com. Joining us here on The Fan, Kingsbury. If you guys watched the Hard Knocks when he was the coach of the Cardinals a couple years ago, he gets to the facility in the 4 o'clock hour most days.
Yeah.
Right around 4 or 4:30 in the morning. You know, goes in, it's pitch black, it's quiet, and it's a couple hours before he sees another human. But he just, football season is football for him. He doesn't really do anything else.
No.
Bed early, wakes up early, and gets to the office. And you wrote some about that as well. I want to talk, though, about the presser. I guess it's been 2 weeks ago now.
Right.
Where he came out and said that he does want to be a coach again. I mean, to me, he's been asked now multiple times, are you going to interview for the job? And he basically shuts it down and says, I'm on to Cincinnati, right? Like, I'm not answering that right now. But if he wasn't interviewing for the job, then I would think that the best way to shut it down would be to say no, which tells me that he is going to interview for jobs. And the first press conference, frankly, you know, that was kind of a open for business sign being turned on above his head with he and his agent by saying, yeah, I want to be a coach again. But what do you make of we know that there are at least four teams that are interested already. There's six openings. What do you make of how choosy he'll be and how many interviews he might do in this cycle?
I think he'll be very choosy. And just taking a Zoom interview won't be that big of a deal. Because even one thing that, for what people worried about, like the distraction and all that, one thing Dan Quinn told us last week, like, if you're just preparing now for these, you're doing it wrong. Like, you should have everything prepared already. You know what I mean? Like, if so, like, whatever he goes in there, it's an hour interview, whatever it is, right? So, but the other thing that Quinn said, too, he's been through this. Like, you know, the first job you're taking because you want to take any job. The second one, you're going to be very choosy. So I think he would be, partly because of all the reasons we say so far, like the money situation. He doesn't need it. You also have a quarterback here that you know you can grow with. And if, you know, you feel confident that, well, listen, this offense is only going to get better as they're working together and as you get more talent. Therefore, you should have really good opportunities in the next year or two, right? It's not like he's some one-hit offensive coordinator. He's a guy that has had head coaching experience. So he's going to be okay regardless. So I don't – like a job like the Saints, I don't know what that would appeal to him. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, the Bears would make sense just from the Caleb Williams standpoint, but – does the organization make sense? And I think that's where you get to be choosy, because if you can find a spot where it's like the ownership and the offensive situation match up, or you have a draft pick where you can get that young guy, et cetera, well, that might make sense. But I think I do really believe he'll be very choosy, because he even told me in there, it's like, it's going to take his quote was, it's going to take a lot for me to lead this kid. And because he knows what he has. And, while others can look and say and wonder, like, what if it's not as good next year? It's not how these guys look. They look at how can it get better, not what if it gets worse. Right. You know what I mean? So he will be very, very choosy.
Makes sense. Before we ask you about the game in a minute, do you expect that he'll be the coach here in week one next season?
As we sit right now, I would lean that way, yes. I from the beginning, I keep hearing like it would take an awful, awful lot to get him away from here, how much he likes it here. I think what helps too is being with Quinn, who went through the same thing, and he was in Dallas for 3 years, and he was very intentional about how he rebuilt his own coaching game, et cetera. And I could see him kind of taking that same path, unless there's some job that comes open, like what if McCarthy comes open and he was born and raised in Texas. Does he, would that be something that would appeal to him? I don't know. But short of that, like I definitely at this point lean toward him being back, but that's reading to you. Yeah. Not even read. It's just talking to people here, talking to him, knowing what it would take. But what I don't know is what exactly would it take? Like, that's the part I can't speak to, but yeah, I think he'll be back here next year.
John, can't let you go without asking you about the playoff game this weekend. As we all expected, the 12-win Washington team going on the road to play this Tampa group. Give me a couple of keys. If Washington's going to win their first playoff game in two decades, what has to happen?
For one, get off to a good start on offense. You can't allow Tampa to get in that double-digit lead on you the way they run the ball. So you have to have a good quick start. I think it's kind of set up for them to be able to have that chance, just because Tampa will come after you. They blitz a lot, but they also have holes in the secondary. So I think I would, if I'm them, I'm looking at that quick game, getting it going, get a good drive, get some points, boom, right? Number two on defense, it's going to be a pick your poison. Bucky Irving is not, he's not Barry Sanders. He's not Derrick Henry, right? But he's been a really good back over the last 5, 6, 7 weeks. What do you want to stop with Tampa? Do you want to stop Evans and McMillan and Baker Mayfield, or do you want to stop Bucky Irving? And so, whichever one you're going to do it, right? But then I think the other thing is you cannot have a game where you're not forcing turnovers. You have got to force a turnover or two in this game to get a short field to help this offense. And I think it's going to be hard. If you don't force a turnover, I just think it's going to be really hard for them to win. But those would be the main things. Like, they can't afford to fall behind in this one. This is the best offense they've faced in a while. So I think they'd be prudent to get a good start. And I think it's possible. Like, Tampa's pass coverage is not that great right now, and I think there's an opportunity. Like, it's funny, because going back and watching the first game, all year I kept saying, like, Jaden Daniels never looked like a rookie. But then when you watch all the games this year, we watched 17 games, and I go back and watch the first one, I'm like, oh, he kind of looked like a rookie.
Week one, he did. Place. Yeah.
Yeah, but at the time, it didn't stand out the way it did in watching it again, for me. And, like, it's just, like, little things, like putting his eyes down 5, 6, 7 yards behind the line and missing some opportunities down the field when he scrambled. Like, that's where he's better at. So, like, you present some of those situations again, the results are different. And, I think the defensive coverage, the secondary, is in a much better spot than it was then. Doesn't mean they're going to shut him down, but I think they're just in a much better spot. There were multiple confused coverages situations that led to huge plays. Now, we've seen it again where in other games where they've given up some big pass plays, but I think they're in a better spot with that. So is that enough? I don't know, but I definitely think you've got to create some turnovers to give yourself a much better chance.
John, great story on Cliff. Thanks for the time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Go read it, ESPN.com. That's John Keim with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Next, state your case. Who is the NFL's MVP? I think Danny and I are on different sides of the aisle here. So we'll get into that right here on The Fan. 1 hour left on Grant and Danny, taking you up to 6:30. Hopefully, we can make your commute home in the snow, ice, cold a little bit better tonight. Thanks for making the show part of your day on The Fan. However you checked us out, Odyssey app, 106.7 The Fan YouTube page, over the air on 106.7 The Fan, in Richmond, AM 910, FM 105.1. Doesn't matter how you listen. We just are glad that you do. Tomorrow, come hang out with us. We're going to be out for the field trip Friday in Arlington. In fact, we'll be in Clarendon tomorrow.
Hyde Social right there at Clarendon Boulevard and North Highland Street right there, one of the nice intersections in the heart of Clarendon. That place is supposed to be awesome. Can't wait to check it out with YIFO. Getting ready for, you know, a playoff game. That'll be fun.
All right, so we've got a possibility ahead here. I think that could be fun. We've got three people working our show now. So I thought we could have a three-man jury, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Our jury includes Darris Dameron, who is the producer of the Grant and Danny radio program, Toby Altizer, you know him as Tope for Time, and the co-host of the most popular and celebrated Washington Nationals podcast in the history of Washington Nationals podcast. And also, corporate Ryan Clary.
Corporate representative Ryan Clary.
He is a new addition to the show, got sent down from Philadelphia, where he is very corporate. And wears dress shirts that are buttoned down. And Corporate Clary is
Cuff also links.
One of our jurors. But I thought what we could do is, because I know you've mentioned on the show a couple of times this week, you think Lamar Jackson's the MVP. I happen to think Josh Allen should be the MVP. We have not debated it. We have not discussed it, behind the scenes or otherwise. So I thought we could state our cases for our respective quarterbacks to you guys, the jurors, and then we could have you decide once and for all who the MVP in the NFL should be based on our counsel. So without further ado, it is time to figure out who is the MVP in the National Football League. Representing the defendant, the plaintiff?
Plaintiff, defendant.
Representing Lamar Jackson, counsel Danny Ruye.
This is close, except for statistical categories and record-setting stuff. Here's what happened. People got bored with Lamar Jackson getting the MVP. Josh Allen had some incredible highlights, great season in his own right. So they decided it should be Josh Allen's turn. That's not supported by any evidence that we have both in regular stats and advanced analytics. So you've got similar number of pass attempts, 474 for Jackson, 483 for Josh Allen. Lamar simply did more with it than anybody else ever has. Led the league in touchdown percentage, 41 touchdowns, only 4 picks, touchdown interception ratio, yards per attempt, adjusted yards per attempt, quarterback rating, the fourth highest ever, up there with the Mannings and the Montanas and the Bradys. QBR, better than Allen. Net yards per attempt, better than Allen. EPA per dropback, better than Allen. And these aren't close, by the way. These are things that are so impossible to comprehend the gap between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. It would be like Josh Allen and Gardner Minshew. That's how big these gaps are. Touchdown passes, I mentioned, not even close. TD interception ratio, not even close. You add in the rushing totals. There is a clear-cut MVP who just had one of the great seasons we've ever seen in the NFL that's going to get passed over for Josh Allen, because someone said at some point Josh Allen should win the MVP, and everybody group thinks because they're tired of giving to Lamar Jackson, who just had, again, one of the greatest seasons we have ever seen in football. And for those who go, no way, Allen did it with less. Allen did it in a crappy division where they won one more game than did Baltimore. Baltimore had some bad moments against some bad teams, fully aware of that. I'll close with this. One of their best moments was against a Bills team where Allen, trying for the MVP, was benched in the fourth quarter because they were getting blown out so bad. So we're talking about little insignificant small details in moments, but if you want the MVP trophy, it's probably not what it should look like against the guy that should win the MVP. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I correctly rest my case.
Very well done. That is the case for Lamar Jackson as the most valuable player in the NFL.
But now it's a crime? We were doing people's court. Now it's like a crime got committed?
I think it's a crime.
Oh, no.
A crime is you trying to take the MVP away from Josh Allen.
What just happened?
That's the crime that's being committed here. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Grant Paulson. I represent Josh Allen. I'm honored to do so because I am on the right side of history. You know, my co-host talked a lot about history, history, history. Didn't give you a whole lot of historical achievement, though, necessarily. Here's some history for you. The Buffalo Bills are averaging 3 points per drive this season. That is top five all-time historically. None of the other teams that have ever done that have done it without a 1,000-yard receiver or a 1,000-yard running back. They did it because without a great wide receiver or a great running back, Josh Allen is that good. Josh Allen is that special. Josh Allen, who does not have a Pro Bowl wide receiver, Zay Flowers. Josh Allen, who does not have a Pro Bowl running back, Derrick Henry, who does not have Pro Bowlers all around him, is just that special. Danny's MVP, Lamar Jackson, plays on a team in Baltimore, the Ravens. You know how many guys are sending to the Pro Bowl? 9. You know how many guys my guy, Josh Allen's team, is sending to the Pro Bowl? 2. The Buffalo Bills are sending 2 players to the Pro Bowl. The Ravens are sending 9 players to the Pro Bowl. I'd like to stress the word value in most valuable player. What are the Bills without Josh Allen? What are the Ravens without Lamar Jackson? Still exceptional defensively. Still got a running back who might be the best in the NFL, not named Saquon Barkley. Still got a Pro Bowl wide receiver in Zay Flowers. None of those things exist where the Keon Coleman oft injured, Curtis Samuel, broken bones every 2 weeks, scat back turned wide receiver, Khalil Shakir are leading the Buffalo Bills. The Josh Allen candidacy can also be stressed by his strong performances and wins against the Chiefs, the number one seed in the AFC, and the Lions, the number one seed in the NFC. I feel very, very good about how he performed against the best teams in football. I will also make the case, and this was brought forth yesterday very eloquently, I thought, by Dan Orlovsky of ESPN, who said that Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen's candidacies when juxtaposed can best be exemplified by negative plays, right? Lamar Jackson, if you look at sacks and turnovers, is more responsible for negative plays than Josh Allen. Josh Allen was the hardest quarterback in the NFL to sack this season. The hardest, number one, best pressure to sack percentage in football. He also turned the ball over less than Lamar Jackson did this season. He had more positive plays, less fewer plays. First quarterback in league history to have over 40 touchdowns, under 8 turnovers, and under 20 sacks. Nobody's ever done that before. Lastly, I'd like to turn my attention to Derrick Henry. I'm going to recite his numbers for you, and then I want to play a game. Who am I talking about? Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley? Because the only difference is about 15 carries. That's the difference. Derrick Henry ran for 1,921 yards. Almost 2,000 GD yards. 325 rushes, 15 fewer than Barkley, or else he might have done the exact same thing that Saquon Barkley did this year. He had 16 touchdowns. Does Josh Allen get to turn and hand the ball off to a 1,900-yard back who's a human wrecking ball? Certainly not. He's certainly not throwing it to a 1,000-yard wide receiver who's going to the Pro Bowl either. He's certainly not a part of a team with a defense with a half dozen Pro Bowlers either. This is very simple. Last year, you all took the award away from Josh Allen, and you gave it to Lamar Jackson because it wasn't about the stats when Josh Allen had better stats. Lamar is the better player on the better team. It's about the best player on the best team. Well, now, Josh Allen doesn't have the simpleton stats that everybody cares about, like touchdowns and interceptions and passing yards, the most minute, silly stats that the simpletons use. But now he can't win it because now it's about numbers. Why don't we just give it to Lamar every year then? The years where it's about numbers, we could do that. The years where it's about being the best but not having the best numbers on the best team, we could do that. We'll just give it to him next year, too. He had a great year. He is deserving on most years. Josh Allen, most valuable player. I rest my case.
Good thing there's no time limit. The crime that's been committed. Or do we have more or we don't do more? What do we do now? Should we go rebut each other or not?
I mean, we can. If there's questions from the jury, I think we could accept those at this point.
We can also notify people if they want to donate to the Josh Allen charity, because it sounds like he was doing this by himself and he's all alone with the 11th best scoring defense. And there's no James Cook there with the leading amount of touchdowns out of the backfield. But
let me know when James Cook runs for 1,900 yards or when Zay Flowers shows up through that door. I'll be waiting.
That superstar.
Again, 9 Pro Bowlers on the Ravens. Mm-hmm. 2 on the Bills.
Courtesy of Lamar. The best point you made, though, and this is true, by the way.
He made those safeties. He made Kyle Hamilton really good.
Yeah. The best point you made, which is correct, is last year the criteria was different. I actually didn't think Lamar should have won it last year. Allen should have. But because that was wrong previously, we got a chance to make it right. Let's have the right one happen now. It's never too late to do the right thing. But yes, questions from the jury.
Do we have any questions from the jury?
Yeah, I'll start off here. Danny, when you were talking about Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. and you believe that he is the MVP.
Right.
What would you say about Derrick Henry then? And one of the most legendary seasons that we have seen from the running back position. I think that's pretty valuable. What do you say?
That's certainly helped him. There's no question about that. But sometimes we choose to punish players because they have good players around them. And other times we don't really seem to care. So this is a time where now we decided we're going to punish Lamar Jackson. Derrick Henry's got nothing to do. He's off the field a lot of times on these passing downs. With a 119.9 quarterback rating, which Lamar Jackson just
quarterback put rating. That's a good one.
So is EPA per dropback. That's another one too. So we got quote unquote simpleton stats where Lamar Jackson walks miles past Josh Allen. Then the advanced stats too, with those pesky advanced ones in terms of like yards per attempt,
advanced
air yards per attempt.
It's
not close, unfortunately. That's bad news.
That's
but
not true.
EPA per dropback,
yeah,
huge
that's
total.
That's a stat. You're right.
What's one of them? But what happens if you drop back? Better things for Lamar Jackson than Josh Allen, who fumbled more, threw more interceptions, and the like.
Josh Allen?
Allen did, yeah. Threw more picks.
Allen turned the ball over less and got sacked less.
Got lucky on fumbles that are 50-50.
Great.
Threw more interceptions in the same number of pass attempts. Right.
Good.
Well, no. I mean, more interceptions is more negative, and fumbles are 50-50.
Interceptions, right?
Sure.
That's interceptions. That you're just counting the ones that bounce off guys' hands?
I'm just counting interceptions, the big total.
Yeah.
So Jackson's better there. And again, so much more productive.
Who turned the ball over more? Who had more negative plays? Who took more sacks?
I don't know.
Order in the court.
Those pesky what happens when you drop back numbers and it's so much better for Jackson.
I'm sure.
I mean, it's right there in front
I'm
of
sure.
you. You can be as sure as you want.
Yeah.
Because it's correct. 0.31 to 0.24. That's expected points added per
drop
back. That
is one of the stats that is in his favor.
It's a huge one. It's a big one, though, because like we're trying to figure out. We're trying to quantify it. What happens? And better stuff happens when Lamar does it. So that touchdown interception ratio, 10.3 to 4.7.
Every year, whoever has the best EPA per play. By the way, I hope you're a running quarterback.
Well, it's one of them.
EPA per play it favors running quarterbacks a ton.
Well, you want to include Allen's totals. For 40 total touchdowns.
No,
you got a long way to go to get to Lamar, though.
It's just EPA per play. That's all we need. We don't even need to watch football anymore.
Who had more negative plays? Who had more negative plays? Who had more negative plays? I could just do that, too. I mean, it's easy to do a repeat something over and over,
right.
But there's so much more bold on Lamar's page than there is on that Allen page. He had a really good season. Probably should finish second.
We'll see. Any other questions from the jury?
Oh, yeah, sorry. We took away your question.
Yes, we do. And this is from the jury. Grant,
yes.
How many rushing yards did James Cook have this season? He had less than 1,000?
Around, I don't know, 9-something?
He had 1,009 yards.
Okay, so he got over 1,000 in the last game.
He was a 1,000-yard rusher.
Okay. 900 less than Derrick Henry, half of Derrick Henry.
Yes.
Value, by the way.
Half of Derrick Henry. Now, let me say this. If you take James Cook out of the equation in Buffalo, does Josh Allen still have that MVP season?
Yes, because James Cook is used about as much as Ray Davis in a lot of their games.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever heard of that guy.
That's a silly Ray Davis bowl, by the way.
So, yeah, I would say he'd be just fine without James Cook.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Toblerone has no questions?
No? All right.
All right. No, we're good on questions.
All right. Is the jury ready to return their verdict?
I think we are.
We are?
I think we are.
All right. Round the horn we go. Darius, you can go first. Who is the MVP in the National Football League?
The MVP of the National Football League will be Lamar Jackson. I side with Danny.
Okay. Very good. Ryan, MVP?
The MVP for me is Josh Allen. I thought Grant made a good case for it, and I think he is the most valuable player, which is the base of this award. I think no one is more valuable than Josh Allen, and I think he laid that out correctly.
Darius forgot that Derrick Henry was on his team, but that's okay. Toby. You're up. This is, by the way, big for Toby.
This is the first
Welcome
time.
Welcome to the show. Deciding
by the way, before I heard him say before this segment, he's like, Joe Burrow. So, like, who knows what's coming out of his mouth right now?
Drum roll, please.
Wild card.
This is official, by the way. This is how they're going to determine the MVP in the NFL. Now, remember, Lamar had the best EPA per play, so I guess none of this matters.
And rating and stuff. And your yards per attempt.
Quarterback rating is really the most important stat.
Well, what happens when you throw the ball? Better stuff. Go ahead, Topes.
Despite Grant Paulson taking three times as long to state the case for Josh Allen compared to Lamar Jackson.
There's just more information to present.
I side with Josh Allen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
The swerve.
By the way, am I supposed to be quick? Is that how court works? Two people commented on that.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Was that not, we don't, like, radio's not about talking?
I think it was totally fine. We filled the segment.
All right.
See, the crime!
Next time I'll give you 60 seconds if that's what you're looking for, guys. Didn't know that was an issue. But Josh Allen is the MVP.
He's going to win it, by the way.
He should. I hope so. That would be great for him. Or we could just give it to Lamar every year and that we could keep changing the definition based on the cool quarterback that we want to win the award. Grant and Danny on the Fan, taking you up to 6:30. Got a busy final segment coming up on Grant and Danny at 6 o'clock. Right at the top of the hour, we've got Devin McCourty joining us. He's not Jason McCourty, but he looks just like Jason McCourty. They're brothers. They're twins. They're both in analysis now on different networks.
Both really good.
They're great on television. They were really good football players. We also have Matt Eumanns next segment as well, about 6:15 on the back end of the segment after McCourty. I want him to tell us who's going to win these college games. We got a game tonight, Notre Dame and Penn State. Apparently, Claire was telling me that a bunch of guys are sick on both teams. Like, one of them's got a virus. The other one's got a stomach bug. It's going through the locker rooms. Just what you want before your national semifinal.
Good Lord. That's an X factor right there. I mean, I didn't realize that. That's on both teams?
I guess so. But the other thing is we don't know who is sick and who isn't. And, like, we normally don't find that out either. Mm-hmm. College is so bad at updating injuries and stuff pregame, but apparently there's a bunch of guys sick on both teams.
I believe from what I saw was that it was like second teamers and special teamers, at least on Notre Dame. I'm not 100% sure about Penn State, but I do know it has affected Notre Dame up the last few days.
Some people are saying, Clary, that you're just preparing a potential excuse in case Notre Dame loses.
Interesting.
What do you say to those people?
I say you're 100% right. I mean, this will be something that I will piggyback on.
Like, if they lose tonight.
Yeah. I'll say they had the stomach flu, which they have the stomach flu right now.
But if they win, this is their Jordan stomach flu game.
He keeps saying they have the stomach flu, like the team collectively, like the mascot has the
stomach flu. All 96.
Well, who knows who has it and who doesn't?
I mean, is it four players or is it 51 players?
We don't know. We don't know at this point. People are just saying that it's a bunch of players that's been going around over the last week. Penn State has, like, food poisoning / a stomach flu as well, so both teams are sickly right now and down in Miami.
Penn State has food poisoning?
I've seen food
or
poisoning.
The flu.
I've seen stomach flu. Notre Dame has the flu. That's what I do know. But Penn State, like, I've seen food poisoning.
Where are you getting this from?
Twitter. Eric Hansen, I believe, from InsideNotreDameSports.com.
Scott Hansen.
Scott Hansen.
7 hours of commercial-free food poisoning.
Puking starts right now.
The puking starts. That's a good bit. Looking at what lies ahead for the Commanders if they can somehow beat the Bucks. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves. But have you thought at all about what a second round would look like for Washington if they can escape with a win?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot depends, of course, on what happens with Green Bay and Philadelphia. That's kind of the terrible pun here, but that's kind of the wild card.
Yes.
If Philadelphia holds serve, as they're favored to do, if they win at home, then Washington's got a date with Detroit Lions.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I know the Lions just played their best defensive game of the year, and Aaron Glenn, their defensive coordinator, might have just gotten himself a head coaching job with how he went about dismantling Kevin O'Connell and Minnesota's offensive staff.
That was his masterpiece.
What a Mona Lisa he painted on Sunday Night Football in game 272 to end the regular season. But that's not a good defense. They are super banged up. They'll get a little bit healthier, I'd imagine, in the couple of weeks leading up to the playoff game. But like Tampa, they'll be able to move the ball on Detroit, I think, if Washington somehow beats the Bucks. So they wouldn't be favored. In fact, they'd be more underdogs in that game, obviously, at a one seed than they're going to be at Raymond James Stadium. That goes without saying. And the Lions are just a better team than the Bucks all the way around. But there's something to be said, Danny, for the possibility of a second straight game where you'd go in thinking, we're going to move the ball. Like, Washington is going to go out and get first downs and probably score points against Detroit. And even though the Eagles' defense has been so good in the second half of the season, maybe against Philadelphia as well. Philadelphia, if you look at it, they gave up 40 points to Washington a few weeks ago.
They did.
Daniels threw 5 touchdowns. Only time he's done that this year.
Yeah, that one to me is more of a one-off than what Detroit has gone through as they've become more and more injured. But your point stands, right? I mean, you just saw it happen. You just saw Jaden Daniels be Superman. And I got news. As far as they go, that's kind of your formula, right? You look at Detroit, though, super quick. As their defense has gotten so banged up, if you're in a game, as Detroit has won some of these, 34-31, they lost 48-42, they won 40-34, I'll take my chance in a game like that where nobody could stop anybody and you're going back and forth rather than, you know, the Detroit that's beaten teams 52-6 as they were 2 months ago. I don't think they have that card in their hand right now.
I look at the Commanders, if they can beat the Bucs, as at that point, it's already house money right now.
Dangerous.
But like, you have nothing to fear at that juncture. There is no expectation in the next round. Right now, you go, man, if they lose handily, if they get embarrassed by the Bucs, there's going to be some idiot somewhere screaming about how they won one game all year long against a team over 500. And in that game, Jalen Hurts got hurt when the Eagles were leading them by 2 touchdowns. And that's going to sting a little bit. But you go out and beat the Bucs. What could possibly be said? Now, all of the pressure is on the team you're playing. And by the way, if the Packers somehow beat the Eagles, then they could get a matchup with the winner of the Rams and the Vikings. So you're a Sam Darnold dud maybe away from the NFC Championship game. Or you are going to L.A., a winnable game. You would have rather him played Rams than the Bucs. I wanted Tampa more than L.A., but imagine if they play them both ahead of the NFC Championship game. And it's the kind of year where a lot of things have gone well and they've had good fortune. So who knows? Maybe it will work out for them.
Well, you think about this, that the number of double-digit win teams in the NFC is kind of insane. One is sitting at home in Seattle, lost a tiebreaker to the Rams despite beating them in the final week of the season. So the point is, there's a lot of pretty good groups here where, you know, and I hate the cliche, but the any given Sunday part, you've got a lot of teams that have put up some pretty good offensive totals at various times. If you can do that in the postseason, you can get that lucky break, right, where the fumble bounces your way or the tip pass interception to stop the other team or they run into a bad day, et cetera. If you can move the ball and score points, you got a chance in this year postseason, the way the NFC is shaking out.
There you go. The Commanders, a win away from maybe even a decent playoff matchup if some things shake out the right way this weekend. All right, next, to wrap things up, taking you up to 6:30, this should be a power segment. We'll cover the NFL playoff games with Devin McCourty, the college playoff games with Matt Eumanns. You don't want to miss it on Grant and Danny.